Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed via podcast on Audio Boom and iTunes. Masters Week, and how special it is every year. But this year, the anticipation has been through the roof as Tiger Woods decided to play only a year and a month after his near-fatal car crash in Southern California. Tiger flew back up to Augusta National last Sunday, practiced in front of galleries of patrons applauding his every move on Monday, and on Tuesday, he told the media in his press conference that he would indeed play, and when someone asked him if he thinks he can win, Tiger simply said, "I do." So it is another miraculous comeback story for Tiger Woods. The fact that Tiger is even here and can walk is the story. And he said he can hit the ball just fine. He has no qualms about what he can do physically from a golf standpoint. It's more about walking that is the hard part. He says 72 holes is a long road. It's a tough challenge, but it's a challenge that he's up for. After all, the elevation on this course is dramatic, the changes in the elevation. There is 160 feet of elevation changes overall, which is about the equivalent of 16 stories in a high-rise building. You have, say, the 10th hole dropping downhill approximately 100 feet. The second hole, 90 feet. The 11th hole, 62 feet. It goes on and on and on. On almost every hole, it is a most strenuous walk, and that is what Tiger is most concerned about, although he has a very arduous routine of prepping for golf and then kind of what he does afterwards, warming up and then basically warming down. How does this come back, the fact that Tiger is here to play so soon after his accident, where he actually shared months after the accident that the doctors even considered amputating his right leg? How does this comeback compare to his miraculous Masters win here in 2019 after he came back from over five back surgeries to win his fifth Masters title and his first major title since he won the U.S. Open back in 2008. Well, this morning we talk with Gary Van Sickle, golf columnist for Morning Read and Sports Illustrated. We discuss that very question. We talk about the significance of Tiger's comeback this time around compared to his 2019 win here. And whether or not he wins or not, actually, the comeback is just spectacular. Gary Van Sickle actually picks Tiger to win. So we'll take a look at why he thinks Tiger will actually win this week. And we talk about, you know, he talks about that Tiger look, the eye of the Tiger, and having covered Tiger enough through the years, basically all his major titles, all 15 of them, I can see that eye of the Tiger too, that look in his eye. He really does believe he can win or he wouldn't be playing, right? So we talked to Gary about a variety of stories coming out of the Masters this week. And we also have a chat with three of my radio colleagues who sit right here on Radio Row with me in the Augusta National Media Center. Austin Rhodes of WGAC Afternoon Show, John Patrick of the WGAC Morning Show, and Craig Humphreys of the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City. You'll hear our conversation, and we cover a lot of topics, and you'll get a sense of the fun that we have every year when we all get together. My pick, by the way, is Cameron Smith. And, you know, Cameron just impressed me so much at the Players' Championship this year. He just put on a putting clinic and a short game clinic. He has that kind of mentality about him where it looks like nothing bothers him. You know, he's young, he's kind of cool from Australia, he has that mullet haircut. Before the Players, he won the Century Tournament of Champions, and he tied for fourth at the RSM Classic. And in 2020, he was runner-up here. So, and then last year, he was tied for 10th. So he knows how to play on this golf course. He's very seemingly relaxed before the Masters even starts. And, boy, I'll never forget when he became the first player to shoot in the 60s in all four rounds here, and that is quite a feat. So my pick this year is Cam Smith, but, boy, any number of players can win. Colin Morikawa, only 25 years old. He is so impressive. He won the Open Championship back in 2021. He won the PGA Championship in 2020. Last year here at the Masters, he was tied for 18th. He's had a pretty good year. I mean, he tied for second at the Genesis Invitational. He was second at the CJ Cup, tied for fifth at the Century Tournament of Champions. He can play, and he has the mentality to handle the pressure here. Colin Morikawa would be a very good pick. And, of course, you never can count out Brooks Koepka, 31 years old, four-time major winner. This is his seventh Masters appearance. And last year, he finished in the top 10 in three of the four majors. I mean, the guy just is a major machine. He knows how to get up and play well at the majors. He's been kind of flying under the radar this week, Brooks Koepka. You just got to love him. Last year at the 2021 majors, he was runner-up at the PGA Championship to Phil Mickelson. He tied for fourth at the U.S. Open and tied for sixth at the Open Championship. Not a great year for Brooks Koepka as far as, you know, majors winning. But, gosh, in the top 10, finishing in the top 10 in three of those four majors last year, that would be a great year for any of these players. But Brooks is, he just gears up for these major championships. He would love to win a Masters title more than anything. And so I think he could really come from out of the radar and contend on the weekend. So look for Brooks Koepka to have another magical performance. He was runner-up. He almost won when Tiger won in 2019. I can't say enough about the impact of the Augusta National Women's Amateur, which was a week ago Saturday, and the 16-year-old winner, Anna Davis, so composed for her age. The competition is so strong with these young women now. It is just so impressive to watch these young ladies. And the fact that the inaugural winner of the Augusta National Women's Am, Jennifer Kupcho, won the Chevron Championship, the first major on the women's calendar, last Sunday, the same weekend, you know, the amateur, the Augusta National Women's Amateur was Saturday. Then you had they focused on the drive, chip, and putt national finals on Sunday. And here is Jennifer Kupcho, who won the Women's Am here at Augusta National in its inaugural year. Her winning her very first major, the Chevron Championship, on the first weekend, just a true testament to the impact of this event and the fact that the Women's Am inspires women to dream big and gives them an opportunity to compete and really showcase their talent in front of a huge, huge audience. So that was just a spectacular win for Anna Davis. And I just love the fact that they have these women, this Women Amateurs tournament. 3 years ago at the inaugural, I got up extra early to go to the honorary tea ceremony featuring Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam and Lorena Ochoa and Sari Pack. All four of those legends hit an honorary tee shot, and it was just so exciting to see that Augusta National was focusing on the women. And the patrons that came out, the spectators that came out last Saturday, unbelievable. I've never seen so many people. Now, they did honor the tickets from the years during the pandemic, the first year when they had no spectators in 2020 when the Masters was in November, and then in 2021 when they had limited spectators. So they did honor some of those tickets, more of those tickets, on the Saturday of the Augusta National Women's Am. And that's why the place was just so packed with enthusiasm, the merchandising tent, with so many parents with their daughters who came to watch these women buying all kinds of merchandise in the merchandising tent. It was just so exciting to see. So I just love the fact that Augusta National has this championship for women. Enjoy the Masters and this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. We are at Augusta National in the Media Center, and it's my pleasure to say hello to Gary Van Sickle, longtime colleague and friend and sports columnist for Morning Read Sports Illustrated. Gary, welcome back to Sports Interview.
Once again, Anne, it's great to be had by you.
Tiger Woods, always in the headlines, whether he plays or doesn't. And this very afternoon, he said, yeah, he's going to give it a try. Your overall thoughts?
I don't think anyone cares about Tiger Woods, Anne. Do you? I mean, really? I was pretty sure he was going to play this week. We all know that Tiger would play here on a broken leg, and he sort of is. Last time he did that, he won a U.S. Open. So it was fun to – he was in a good mood. I thought he was I don't know, what's the word, more giving than usual in an interview. And he's got that confidence. I can't really put my finger on it, but he's talking like a guy who – he's not here to complete a comeback. He's here to win the dang tournament. And he didn't want to be too open about that, but he's here to win. And he was asked, do you believe you can win? And he said, I do, because he wouldn't be here otherwise. So I'm not recommending anybody wager, but if I was in a state that had wagering, I would put a few dollars on him at 40 or 50 to 1 because I'm a believer.
You are a believer, and maybe he was giddy. You know, he's had this just incredible transformation in the last, you've seen it, 5-6 years. He's happy. He's a, you know, he loves hanging out with Charlie, his son. He's just more, he just seems like a different person, despite what he's gone through physically. And then before that, obviously, all the controversy with his personal life. But he is a new Tiger, new image, and the legend continues.
You know, it's almost like having his kids grow up and being a father is what it took for him to kind of mature into a reasonably normal adult. And I don't mean that in a critical way. He's had a life like unlike anybody else. I mean, we can't imagine. I mean, honestly, he's been famous since he was on the Michael Douglas show at, what, 2 or 3 years old? He's been like Elvis his whole life. And, of course, that's going to affect your personality. And he didn't understand that other people in the world have needs. And, you know, I mean, he was early in the career, he didn't give the fans much. And I think being a father, he's, you know, he cares about other people now way more than he used to. And it's a great transformation for him. I'm glad he's back. I mean, I'm glad he's able to, after the car wreck, I'm glad he's able to have a normal life, because I wasn't really sure he'd be playing golf again. And obviously he didn't know either, but he could be sitting at home in a wheelchair or something after that wreck. So it's great that he's back, and it's even better that he's playing the Masters and he thinks he can win. And he's going to blot out the sun this week. Nobody else is going to be playing the Masters except Tiger, and that's partially our fault, but it's also the public's fault, because they want it. They want to know what he's doing, and so we're giving the public what they want. So I don't feel bad about that, but it's going to be kind of sad if whoever wins the Masters is kind of going to be the second deck of the headline. Now, Tiger finishes ninth, but so-and-so wins. I mean, that's how it's going to be. Look, every couple of years we have a Masters that's a Tiger Masters, and it's all about Tiger all the time. All right? When 2019 was one, and this is another one.
Well, which brings me to my next question. What do you consider more of a comeback story? Tiger playing this week based on, you know, that near-fatal car accident that happened a year and a month ago, or his 2019 Masters win?
You know, in 2019, he'd already had some good tournaments. He played well going into that, so that was pretty remarkable. I think, I know nothing compares with this that Tiger's done. Not even winning on the broken leg at Torrey Pines, which were micro fractures. Technically, it wasn't like he broke his tibia in half or anything. It still looked pretty painful. I don't think any of us want to try it at home. Kids, don't do this at home. Don't get microfractures. I think this is ranks with the greatest comebacks in golf. I mean, I would put Ben Hogan, obviously, number one, in part because his was way more heroic, his crash. I mean, I hate to describe a crash as heroic, but Hogan in the fog saw that bus coming at the last second. He turned the wheel of his car so it hit on the driver's side and not on the side where his wife was sitting. And he paid a penalty for that, but he survived. Tiger, you know, it's funny we talk about his comeback, but we don't talk about the accident anymore. It was a one-car accident. It was totally self-inflicted. We don't know what caused it. Was he simply driving too fast? Was he texting? Was he being careless? Did he fall asleep?
The facts say he was driving 85 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone.
Yeah, he was late for an interview or a photo shoot, and he was going fast, and he could have just inadvertently hit the median. And, you know, at 75, 80 miles an hour, you hit the median, Joey Chitwood's not going to save that car at that point. You're airborne, and it's out of control. But, you know, we'll never know, obviously, if he dozed off or was texting. But his was a self-inflicted accident, and, you know, it's too bad. But, you know, he's had a unique life. He's, like I said, he's been Elvis since he was born, just about. So I think this comeback, I would rate it number two, right behind Hogan, as one of the great comeback. Because you look at that car, who thought he was going to come back and play competitive golf and contend, which he hasn't done yet. I'm jumping ahead a little bit by saying that, but I think he knows he's going to play well. I mean, the look on his face practicing the other day, he's got his game face. He's got a Sunday game face on Monday, putting balls on the practice screen. That tells me something. And I think you might want to keep an eye on him, which I think will be easy to do because everyone here is going to be following.
If you can actually weed your way through the numbers of patrons out there watching him. Interesting thought about the comeback. Would you think it's more grand this year? Just the fact that he's playing. God, if he were to win. Talk about, I mean, 2019 was labeled the comeback of all ages, not just in golf, but in sports. I don't want to get carried away either, but, I mean, the fact that he's just playing, it's a comeback story of the ages.
Well, we compared 2019. That was his Jack in 86 moment. His, you know, curtain call, I'll come back and win one more time and that's it. Well, maybe that's not going to be it. Can you imagine? I mean, besides the enormity of the win, there's the history. Another Masters gives him six. That ties him with Nicklaus. It gives him 16 majors. He puts 18 back in play. It gets him one past Snead on the all-time victory list. He has that by himself. And now you get into the debate where, well, who's the greatest golfer of all time? I think based on how, you know, the actual skills and all that, I think clearly Tiger Woods had a way more complete game than Jack Nicklaus. I would say Jack still has a better record with the 18 majors, but Tiger is the best golfer we've ever seen. So a lot of things would come out of this. And what would this be, Tiger Mania 5.0? I mean, we've gone through how many waves of Tiger Mania? And this week it already feels like Tiger Mania, and he hasn't even hit a golf shot yet. So it's going to be an amazing week, and I hope Jack Nicklaus, who's going to be in the ceremony on the first tee, I hope he hangs around Sunday, because if Tiger were to win, I'd sure like to talk to him and get his comments.
What are the odds, Gary Van Sickle, say 2-3 months ago, that Tiger would be playing the Masters and Phil Mickelson would not?
Oh, man, I wish there would have been a bet like that. Of course, I wouldn't have been smart enough to take it. Yeah, how could talk about turning the table. So I don't, you know, the whole Phil thing is a little bit of a mystery. I guess it's, you know, a friend of mine asked me, and I had to go to Target to get a cable last night to work in the press room, and I ran into a buddy called me, and he said, what's the real story? Let me see if I have this Phil thing right. Basically, he was working at Company A, and he got recruited by Company B to go work for them. And then while he's still working at Company A, before he's taken another job, he goes back to his buddies at Company A and recruits 5 or 6 or 8 more guys to go with him to work at Company B. He said, now, is that about what Phil did? It's like, yeah. Yeah, and he also called them murderous so-and-so. You know, he called the new guys murderous so-and-sos. So basically he was disloyal to his employer, and he set up, you know, made a bad sentence, a caustic sentence on the new guys. But the thing about the new guys is, if they're so terrible, why have basically every top-ranked player in the world in the last 5 years? They've all gone over to play the Saudi International. They all go over to play in Qatar and play in all those Middle East events. They're already complicit. And if you think the Saudi money is blood money, they've all already taken it. So what is Phil saying that, you know, Phil said what everybody already knows. Why is that so much worse than these other guys who go over and play and nobody criticizes them? So, and on top of that, who's leading the charge on the criticism? It's kind of the Golf Channel, which, by the way, is what PGA Tour owns, what, 15% of that? I mean, it's kind of a propaganda arm for the PGA Tour, because PGA Tour is their bread and butter. Without that, you don't have a network. So it's an odd thing that's happened to Phil, but I guess he's, you know, he's being dismissed for being disloyal, kind of two-faced. And, you know, his employer didn't like what he did, so his employer suspended him and or fired him. We're not sure yet. It'll be interesting to see if he even gets to defend his PGA champion title next month.
See, it's my contention that, the reasons his sponsors dumped him were more about what he said about the PGA Tour. I mean, the Saudi Arabia League, obviously it's not good to, you know, be already moving to Company A while you're criticizing Company B and pretend like you're the martyr for, you know, try to save all the players, right? But I just think it's what he said about the PGA Tour, criticizing Jay Monahan, calling him a dictator, the PGA Tour is greedy. I mean, you've seen the quotes, which leads me to my asking you, do you feel that the PGA Tour suspended Phil Mickelson?
It sure seems like it, because I don't think Phil would willingly walk away from playing at a Masters or certainly a PGA. I think you make a great point. He's not only is he criticizing the PGA Tour, but the sponsors are all in bed with the PGA Tour. They're business partners. So, in effect, he's criticizing his own sponsors. So, talk about dropping the ball PR-wise. You know, Phil has needed some PR help over the years, and I don't know if he didn't have it or if he, you know, shockingly maybe he did but didn't listen. That would never happen with Phil, right? He doesn't think he knows it all. So I think you made a great point. I think that may well be the case. But either way, it's like, you're right. How is Phil Mickelson not here? And Tiger is. I don't know. You could argue that one, they're equally miraculous moments.
Bryson DeChambeau was asked about it earlier in the week, and he has not gotten a text from Phil. He said he texted Phil, did not hear from him. He said basically in quotes, "Phil's gone dark." Did anybody use that as a headline?
Yeah, I think everybody did. You know, Phil is, he's the other guy who moves the needle behind Tiger. And he's just kind of a pariah right now. And I would say somewhat unfairly so, but he needs to figure out a plan. Look, the way to get over this, in my opinion, is to come out, have a press conference, answer all the questions, and start playing. I mean, an easy thing to do would, you know, if he's allowed. I mean, he should go play some senior tour events where he might do well and maybe win a couple times. You know, if you look at sports heroes who have committed misdeeds of any form, whether it's PR or actual being charged with crimes, the guys who get out of it are the guys who come back and win. I mean, look at Tiger Woods.
Tiger reformed his image 100%, as we were just talking about.
Look at Kobe Bryant. He had much worse charges, and he came back, and the Lakers won how many titles? And everybody forgot. You know, everybody forgive and forget, because you're winning things. So if Phil can get back and play, that's what he should do, and he should come clean, answer all the stuff, and say some of the things I said. It's like, look, everybody's already taken that money. They're complicit. And, by the way, how many things do you buy from China that are made in China? China's got enslaved a whole race of people over there, the Uyghurs. They committed all kinds of other espionage in the U.S. They gave us the Wuhan virus. So you're giving them, you know, in this case, we're taking money from the so-called bad guys. In China's case, you're giving them your money, so you're actually supporting them. So which is worse? You could make a case for that. So, again, that might make more people mad. But Phil should come back and play if he can and, you know, just answer all the questions, because the story drags out. The longer you don't talk, you're still kind of a headline. Oh, Phil's, you know, like this week, Phil's gone dark. Well, if Phil had talked, it would be over. Get the stuff over so that your story is done in a day or two and another news cycle comes on. And, you know, if Phil had taken care of this, Tiger would be blotting out the sun right now. We wouldn't be talking about Phil Mickelson, except that he's not here. He said, oh, he's suspended, so he's not playing. And that would be the end of it. But that's not how it happened.
All right, let's look at all the press conferences early in the week here, Masters Week. And who was more insightful than John Rahm? Does he not give a great press conference? Gotta love that guy.
We are so spoiled. We're so lucky. After 20 years of Tiger and Phil saying very little or not much they really meant, we've had guys like Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, now John Rahm, Colin Morikawa, guys who more than happy to spill their guts, basically, and tell us their innermost feelings, whatever, the good and bad. And, you know, Jordan Spieth has even said, sometimes I say too much. It's like, I think he does.
On the golf course as well. He gets a little analytical, to say the least.
Yeah, he and his caddy have some long exchanges. So you can see he's a very smart guy. But, no, it's a great way to relate. Fans will relate to you if they get to know you, and that's a great way to do it, is by answering questions in depth and giving a little something. You know, some guys just don't have it. Cameron Smith is a wonderful guy. Seems really likable, but he's not a deep thinker. He just goes out and plays golf, comes home, maybe has a beer, and goes fishing. And, you know, he's a great putter and great chipper because that's what he is. And what else do you want to know? That's about it for Cameron Smith. So Rahm is more nuanced and is, you know, he's got the whole new father thing. There's so much there. And he smiles a lot. He's so happy. That's the other thing. These guys are all happy a lot. I think that's what fans really are drawn to, somebody who smiles and seems nice and looks like they're having fun. You know, Phil Tiger's out there grinding all those years, and he won majors. You walk up 18, you know, especially in Scotland, the Scottish fans just want him to acknowledge the fans. And he's, you know, he kind of gives the cursory wave and walks to the green. He didn't give them the love back, so they were a little, you know, miffed by that. But Phil has taken the Arnold Palmer route, so he's done a much better job. But these guys are, they've made themselves so likable. If you follow golf, it's a lot more fun.
And that exchange where he was talking about, John Rahm was talking about Tiger not giving him any help whatsoever as to how to play Augusta National, where he'd give JT, Justin Thomas, a dissertation. That was very funny. Anyway, who are you picking to win? Last question, Gary. Who are you picking to win this week?
Well, before Tiger's press conference today, I was picking Cameron Smith because...
Same with me.
His game travels well, because if you can get up and down from a ball washer and make every putt inside of 20 feet, you can win anywhere. To me, he's Jordan Spieth 2.0. I'm going to say, you know, I'll go out on a limb. I think Tiger's my 1A pick. I'm that look on his face, there's something there. I think he knows his game is there. Now, the weather might hurt him if it's going to be cold. You know, he made a joke about, all you old guys know what it's like, and that's everybody in the room in the case of the media. Everybody's older than him. So that might be a problem. But if he can get off to a decent first day and survive the not having played all this time, if he can get out of here with an even par or one over or something, I think he could make a run on the weekend. I mean, like he did in 19, he just kind of sneaked up and was sort of near the mix, and then everybody else hit balls in the water and handed him the thing on a platter. So that's one way to win a Masters, and I think he could do it again.
Wow. Gary Van Sickle picking Tiger Woods. I hope you're right. Wouldn't that be just another comeback story of the ages? Just incredible.
it might be too big of a story to write. And that's what a lot of guys said in 86 when Jack won. I was like, I can't write something. I forget who it was. He said, I can't write it. It's too big. It's too big. Well, make something up. You know, what can I say? That's what you want, a big moment. Here it is. Don't choke on it. Write it up.
That's what you get paid the big bucks for, right, Gary?
That's exactly right. That's what Ann Gorey gets paid for, to cover the big events and the big win. Jim Nance will have some kind of historic, you know, what would Jim Nance, he's always got his closing line prepared. What's his closing line for Tiger Woods winning the thing, you know?
It can't be again. Not one for the ages. He's already done that one, so we'll have to figure one out for him.
Maybe he could, you know, another one for the ages, or yet another one for the ages again in a row. I don't know.
Stick to riding, my friend. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining me on Sports Interview.
And that was a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to be broadcasting from Augusta National Media Center, the week of the Masters. And it is also a true honor to be talking to my colleagues here on Radio Row. We have Austin Rhodes, the afternoon voice of WGAC, John Patrick, the morning guy on WGAC, and Craig Humphreys of the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City. Hey, guys, it's always so great to connect, and it's always somewhat of a fun reunion when we do, right, John Patrick?
It's good to have you back. Yes, it's always a fun reunion. It's funny, the folks that we've met through the years, and we know them because of this place, see them maybe once a year, maybe more, but it's good to have you back.
And John comes up to the east end of Long Island occasionally to play in the charity golf event. You probably know all the golf courses up there now. Maidstone, Shinnecock, Saponic, Friar's Head. You're a regular.
Yeah, my arm has to be twisted a lot to come to the Hamptons, yes.
And my dear buddy, Austin Rhodes, who's like a brother to me, actually put air in my tire this morning, the car.
Yeah, is that a euphemism for something else? I don't quite understand.
Austin's been my host for, I don't know how many years, over 20 years. Austin and his family are so gracious and host me every year when I come to Augusta. And Atticus is my favorite cat in the whole world.
This is true. And during Ann's incredible charitable golf tournament up in New York, when John is invited to play, she invites me to stay in her house in Orlando. She wants me as far away from New York as possible at that point.
Well, we won't tell the audience why, because the last time I had you on the air on WFAN, I had to hang up on you, but we won't go into that.
I thought she was going to insult my golf game, not my broadcasting skills, but that's okay, too.
All right, let's talk about Tiger Woods. Everybody talks about Tiger Woods, whether he's playing or not playing, but early in the week, he said, yes, I am playing, and yes, I think I can win. What were your thoughts?
I agree with him. I'm glad he's playing. The place, it's always a better golf tournament when he's playing in it. The thing that he mentioned in passing yesterday that I think will be a factor, it's great that he's playing. Everybody's happy that he's playing. It's great to see him back on the course. How well will he play? It's going to get cold here. I mean, I think Saturday the high is 58, and he talked about the fact that he can't really play in the cold. And he's from southern Florida. It's probably cold to him today. So we'll see how all of that pans out. The weather, always changeable. But it's great that he's here. He says he's playing well. He says his game is not the issue. Walking is the issue. Now, you know, that may play a role in how well he actually plays. Does he compete? Let's see.
160 feet of elevation changes on this golf course. It is a hilly golf course. Craig Humphreys, I know, because you and I got to play it twice. We played it three times, but together you and I played it twice the Monday after, and we walk it every year. It is hilly. It's strenuous. Can Tiger handle it?
Oh, I think he can. I don't think he'd be here if he didn't think he could handle it. So, no, I the golf, I don't think he's worried about that much. It's just like John says, the cold weather, I think that's going to be a factor. Tomorrow morning, it's possible rain, but I think by the time he tees off, the rain should be out of here. So, I expect him to make the cut. I think he can compete. I don't think he's going to compete to win the tournament But I think he makes the cut, and he is. I hope he is around on Saturday for the cold weather.
Austin, what is a bigger comeback story in your opinion? The fact that he is even here, Tiger Woods, playing after what happened a year and a month ago, the near-fatal car crash in Southern California, or his miraculous comeback win in 2019?
Well, in the history books, the comeback win at this point is going to be it, unless, of course, he pulls out. Even he doesn't have to win here. A top 10 finish Sunday will go down in history as one of the most amazing sporting feats of all time, not just in golf, but of all time. If he somehow pulls off another green jacket after what he's been through, I think this astute panel that we have gathered right now will agree that that will become the most amazing story in professional sports in our lifetimes, if not ever.
Craig, your thoughts on the comeback story of the century? Which would it be, his playing after what he went through a year ago, or 2019, his miraculous comeback then to win the Masters, his fifth Masters title?
Yeah, medically, it's probably this one. But like Austin said, 2019, I mean, to come back and win here after, you know, he had not won here since, what, 2005? You know, so 14 years since he had won here, hadn't won a major since 2008. To top that victory would be, you know, something special. If he would win here this week, it would be like a miracle. I mean, to where he was 13 and a half months ago, just to be here and playing golf again. I remember when he had the accident, we questioned whether we would ever see him walk again. First, we questioned whether he would live. But the fact that he's here and he's playing golf at Augusta National, it's like a bonus.
And then Tiger shared with everybody that there was a chance they could have amputated that right leg. That's just crazy, right?
Yeah, he said he was in bed for 3 months. He said, for 3 months I didn't get out of bed, see my own living room. And so, yeah, it's amazing that he's here. I'm not going to put anything past him, especially on this golf course.
John Patrick, talk a little bit about the transformation of Tiger Woods. And, you know, you've seen him from day one, five titles here, his amateur play before he became a professional. He wasn't a nice guy. He didn't really talk to a lot of media. He didn't really sign a lot of autographs out there. Today, totally different guy, smiling. He's buddies with a lot of guys on the tour. When he was at the height of his career, he wouldn't even talk to half the guys on the tour. Just your thoughts on his transformation as a person.
You know, I think it's complicated, as we all are. We're all complicated individuals. I don't know if was it the self-inflicted wounds of 2009? Did that humble him to such a degree? I was always surprised how that seemed to affect him mentally, because until that point, he was so incredibly focused in everything that he did that there was a part of me that thought, you know, he'll get through this. But he never really did seem to get through that from a mental standpoint, and may have come out on the better end, you know, through the years. But then you add to that children and watching them grow up and watching them do what kids do. You add to that just flat out age, wisdom of growing older, loss of his father. He had a lot going on. I guess I honestly think his life was so incredibly focused around golf for such a long period of time that life then began to get in the way. And he learned from life getting in the way, from having all of the things that in many cases happened to us, happened to him. And that was not the case until 2009. So I think he grew up. I don't know how old he was in 2009. But since then, he's grown up.
You don't see a bigger smile on his face than when he is talking about his son, Charlie, and playing Augusta National with his son, Charlie, you know, a week before Masters Week, and the fact that Charlie went out and, you know, did play the par 3 course. I mean, it's great to see that, you know, how mature he's gotten and what a very good father he is.
You know, to that point, and we don't know the backstory, we don't know the real story, but in a divorce and in a separation and in that public situation, you know, that could have gone a lot of different ways. He didn't have to be close to those kids, and those kids didn't have to be close to him, but that's credit to him, and Elon and what they work their way through. So I do think I do think he does think he's blessed that X amount of years later he's as close to his children as he is.
And he does express a lot of gratitude, not only to his family and support system, but to the medical world who has gotten him to this point. Austin?
I have to hearken back to something you said just a minute ago, and it just goes to show you the different perspectives all of us have. Certainly Tiger's persona early in his career and at the height of his career was everything that you said it was as far as his interaction with media, his interaction with other players. But I got to tell you something. There was a six-year-old girl who was out on this golf course in 1997. It was my time to get choked up first this time. Christine Rhodes, she's 31 now. He had a moment of kindness and just absolute generosity with my daughter and on the fairway. He was playing out of the cotton-picking pine straw on number seven, I think. And there was no reason for him to take a minute and look over and make a comment and smile and wave her way, and he did. And he had me at hello at that point. I mean, I was always interested in watching him. I became a fan of him at that moment. And, say what you want to about his prickly personality, but it almost seems like he was afraid to be nice to people. Because in the opportunities that he's given to make friends and that he
with Westwood One from 2001 to 2006 or 7, I'm interviewing the leaders of the Masters, U.S. Open, PGA. So, I probably interviewed him 35, 40 times over those years. Now, these were just interviews, two-minute interviews talking about his round. Normally, he liked to do them walking. We'd walk to the locker room, to the car, to the driving range. And, frankly, probably because he wasn't going to stop and sign the autographs anyway, but he was doing the interview with me walking. But what I'm saying, he never turned me down. He turned me down one time when he had to get to the driving range, like it was 5 or 10 minutes before dark. But that was it. In all those years, could not have been nicer, never talked down to me, always gave me really good answers. Bob Papa, that was working with us at the time, he said, Jack's never given you a good interview and Tiger's never given you a bad interview. But it was, he was always great to me. I can't complain at all.
All right. Let's talk about Phil Mickelson. What are the odds that as of perhaps 2 months ago, that Phil Mickelson would not be playing? Three-time Masters champion Phil Mickelson, PGA champion 2021, would not be playing this Masters, and Tiger would. John?
Well, huge odds. But Phil, like Tiger, appears to have, again, there may be a self-inflicted wound. I think he's suspended. You'll never hear that from the PGA Tour, but I think that he is. I think he's going to be away for a while. I don't think he'll be at the PGA Championship. I don't think he'll defend that. I don't know how long he'll be away. The commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, has said he's open to talk to Phil whenever Phil wants to talk. And that will happen at some point. I don't know if Phil sits back and waits for us to kind of forget about things. Other things happen. Other things move on. It happens all the time. So I don't know if he's just kind of waiting us out to where we don't really care much anymore about Phil. Would some huge story here help that whole process? Yep. But it'll all rear its ugly head again if he's not at the PGA. He's a complicated individual. He's always been a complicated individual. I think he has kept as much as he says he's public, I think he keeps a lot of things private. And I'm afraid some of those private things are coming home to roost.
Well, I just think I want to know more about the Saudi tour, what's going to happen there. I don't think we've heard the end of that story. At least Greg Norman says we haven't heard the end of that story yet. But I'm just intrigued as someone who loves the game of golf and as a golf fan to see where that is going. And we've heard all the top names in the sport. Basically, they've pledged their allegiance to the PGA Tour. But the guys who are, say the guys who are ranked anywhere between 30 and 70 in the world, how many of those guys have been approached? What kind of money are they? Because for guys like that, if you approach them and they're being approached with, $30, $40 million guarantees over a period of years, that's tough to turn down for anyone. So I'm just curious to see where that is going. As far as Phil Mickelson, I'm curious – just to know, you know, how deep was Phil's involvement? I mean, we've heard that he has said that he was, you know, doing the drawing up an operating agreement. At least, his attorneys for a couple of other players who are those players. You know, it's hard for me to believe that Phil was that deep into it where he's drawing up an operating agreement without being paid a substantial amount of money. So, was Phil paid? How much was he paid? Those are questions that I have on the situation that I think we're going to see. We're going to find out about the other players on down the line. You know, how many of those guys are going to go over to this Saudi tour? I'm very curious about that because, you know, like I said, that's a lifetime. I mean, could take care of your family and, you know, down three or four generations, some of the type of money that they're talking about.
A lot of question marks. There's so many interesting questions out there. I have a question. Do you think he can rehab his image? I mean, a year ago, the guy couldn't do anything wrong. It was just a magical, miraculous victory for a 50-year-old. He was at the top of the world. Everybody adored him. Can an athlete rehab his or her image without winning? Winning kind of cures all ills, right?
Well, to some extent, Michael Vick has done a pretty good job of rehabbing his reputation, and his sins were far more dramatic than anything Phil has committed publicly that we know of. But two things. Number one, the PGA Tour really needs to be more upfront about how they're dealing with this. I said to you yesterday, there's less transparency with the PGA than there is with the Russian president's administration at this point. I mean, it's really unfortunate. That's number one. Number two, and this question was asked today, and the chairman at Augusta National, I don't want to say he sidestepped it, but he didn't really address it directly. If the Saudi Arabian tour comes to be, do you recognize those victories the same way that you recognize a PGA victory? If you have a major championship, is it rewarded with a Masters invitation the same way that, you know, a British Open championship would be? So there are a lot of competition questions, invitation questions that come up. Because if you've got the best golfers in the world taking half of their schedule and moving it to the Middle East, how do you not recognize that if you're the Masters golf tournament?
All right, Austin already got tears in his eyes when he was recalling Tiger Woods' kindness to his daughter. I'll tell you what brings tears to my eyes. And that was last year after Hideki Matsuyama won the Masters, his caddy turning around to the golf course and bowing. I just think it was one of the most poignant moments in all of sport. And I was talking to a Japanese photographer earlier this morning and asked her, how the Japanese people reacted to that. And she said it's a very common thing over there. But here, to do that, it just took my breath away. And every time I think about it, it really, really moves me. John?
That was my thought initially, was that's just a very common courtesy in Japan. And I cringe a little bit as to how much we think about that. Oh, look, it's amazing someone is courteous. It's, you know, that's just what they do. That's just in their DNA. So, yes, was it a wonderful moment? Sure. I wish we didn't find it so wonderful. I wish we were a little more courteous, in all honesty.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's more than being courteous in our culture.
Yes.
It is honorable, and that is a norm in that culture, correct? But as you say, just to see that here, it was the first time ever, a Japanese player ever won the Masters. And I just thought that was, it really touched me. What was the most moving experience here in your all these years covering the Masters that you have found?
Oh, for me, it's easy, and that's Nicklaus's win in 86. I grew up a Jack Nicklaus sycophant. I mean, the kids who knew me growing up knew that on the putting green, I was Jack for this and Jack for that and Jack for the Masters. It was my second Masters. Oh, I never thought I'd see that. That was never supposed to happen. He birdied 9 and birdied 10, and I had to get out there and see some of that. And I saw on the board he bogeyed 12, and I'm like, well, I'll just go watch a little bit of it. Saw him birdie 13, saw him par 14, saw him hit the left before the second shot on 15, but heard it, and then heard the eagle. And I was walking into what was then the Quonset hut we used to be in when he hit the tee shot on 16. And to this day, Tiger included, to this day, I have never heard a roar like I heard that day. So for me, with him, easy, 86.
I loved hearing you tell that story. Craig, how about you? Most memorable moment in all the years you've been covering the Masters?
Yeah, I didn't arrive until 1988. I wish I'd been here in 86. But it's 2019. It's Tiger winning in 2019. I know they had to tee off early that morning, a lot of different things about that day. But Tiger Woods winning again, I mean, people had counted him out. They said he was done. What he overcame to win in 2019, that's about as good as it gets. But as far as emotions, and you were talking about, you know, tears and bowing on the 18th green, the tears on the 18th green that I remember were from Ben Crenshaw in 1995, you know, just, a week or so after the death of his longtime coach, Harvey Penick, and he had been back, you know, for the funeral that week, I think on Wednesday before the Masters, Tuesday or Wednesday of that week, he had gone back to Austin and you know, the teacher of Tom Kite and Ben Crenshaw. And then for Ben Crenshaw to win at Augusta National that week, you know, really pretty much from out of the blue, his current form wasn't that great and so forth. That was a very emotional win, Crenshaw's second win here at Augusta National.
Austin, how about you?
I can echo everything that these gentlemen have said, with the caveat and the addition of the 97 Tiger Woods victory. I mean, not only did he become the first African-American to win the tournament, he blows the record book up. He does it with his father, who unfortunately did not get to see him play most of his career here. But his father was in attendance, his mother was in attendance, and it was truly a breathtaking moment, not just in Augusta National history, but in sports history. And that, again, for many of us, was one of the most amazing things that we'd ever witnessed. By the way, the bowing at 18, Augusta National missed their chance. That should have been the gnome this year. The gnome should have been Asian, and he should have been bowing. And wouldn't that have been something?
Oh, that's a great idea. Let's suggest that to Chairman Ridley next time we see him. All right, guys, it's always a pleasure to talk to you all. I love working alongside you every year here. You make it a lot of fun. You're just some of the, you know, my best friends in the business, and I really appreciate your support and camaraderie and friendship through the years.
We need you to pick up a quart of milk on the way home, and Atticus wants a can of tuna.
Certainly. Anything for that cat. I'd do anything for Atticus.
You just need to meet a better class of people. If we're the best you got. Gee whiz.
She aims low. Yes, she does. She aims low.
Hey, it's always an honor to be with the amazing Ann Liguori, WFAN in New York, and all the different shows that you have, Ann. You are the star of Radio Row here in Augusta.
Thanks, guys, so much. And we'll do it again, hopefully, in 2023. Thanks for being on Sports Interview.
Thank you. Ann. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
My thanks to Gary Van Sickle, to Austin Rhodes, John Patrick, and Craig Humphreys. My thanks to Mike Goodsell in production, Delaney Hefner in the studio, and all you golfers out there, understand this quote from the legendary Bobby Jones. He says, golf is assuredly a mystifying game. It would seem that if a person has hit a golf ball correctly 1,000 times, he should be able to duplicate the performance at will. But such is certainly not the case. That's right, Bobby Jones. You did it better than any other amateur player in the world, but everybody can relate to that quote. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the Masters. Be kind. Be safe. And I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.